This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Ratchford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and UConn Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You are encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC, News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information and answers all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be with you on this Saturday morning. Unfortunately, it is a very rainy Saturday morning, and more unfortunately, I have to stand on the sideline for the Coast Guard Academy homecoming game against Norwich University. So that will be interesting, to say the least. And for those of you going to UConn, they play South Florida today, and my daughter Stephanie will be covering that sideline. And that's why they make Gore-Tex rain gear. So anyhow, I'll keep you all posted on that. And hopefully you folks will be somewhere dry and warm. A couple of housekeeping things. Several people have reached out to me wanting the phone number for Dr. Karen Johnson, who we spoke to last week. For those of you who are not listening at the time, Dr. Johnson is a sleep disorder specialist. She's a neurologist and is really expert at looking at the neurologic implications of sleep disorder. So her phone number is area code 413-794-5600. She is at Bay State Health. And later today, my guest today will be Dr. Joy Antonelle DeMarchida. Dr. DeMarchida is a friend and colleague at Hartford Hospital. She is director of the Chase Family Movement Disorders Center at Hartford Hospital. And it's giving me great pleasure to have her on today. I've known her since she was a resident and then went into practice and has just accomplished so many great things. We're going to be talking about movement disorders in general, things like tremor, Tourette's disease. So these types of movements that you see that are abnormal, restless leg syndrome. In the second half of the program, we're going to specifically focus in on Parkinson's disease because there's so many exciting things going on with respect to diagnosing Parkinson's disease as well as treating it. And there's an interesting history behind it. So she is a fellowship-trained, board-certified neurologist who does movement disorder. So we're going to be chatting with her. And as always, if you have questions, so it's going to be a longer show from the standpoint of the interview. You can email me any questions you have regarding Parkinson's disease or other movement disorders at info@alessimd.com. And we'll be monitoring that. And we can hopefully get your questions in for Dr. DeMarchida. This day in medicine, October 21st, 1639, Virginia was the first state where they introduced a law specifically referencing the medical profession. So back in 1639, they actually put forward an act to compel physicians and surgeons to declare an oath on the value of their medicine. So in order to start avoiding people from selling snake oil and getting into unapproved treatments, these physicians had to take an oath that these medications and these treatments had been properly vetted, properly tested, before they applied them to their patients. So very interesting. Because it's really become a fine line now. We talk about some of these scams out there. Last week we talked about some of these lab tests that are not approved and are a panacea, right? The Theranos thing. One drop of blood from your finger could detect any type of cancer. So again, This goes back some time, and maybe we should be revisiting that a little bit more. An update on COVID. I think it's worth giving a little bit of an update. At the University of Connecticut, one of the institutions where I work, we have gone back to masking in the outpatient clinics. So physicians, when face-to-face with patients, must wear a mask. We also encourage our patients to wear a mask. Why? Well, we've had to take a step backward. First of all, the number of hospitalizations. Remember, we can't test positivity now from the standpoint of what percentage of the state is positive. But we can look at hospitalizations, and hospitalizations are up 19% that are in some way related to COVID. What's interesting here is that I've not changed. To be honest with you, right along, we have my daughter Catherine and I and our electrodiagnostic laboratory have been wearing masks and have been giving patients masks. And when we offer them to patients, no one says no. Why? Because you're in a clinic where, guess what? There are sick people. And who knows what they had? They came here to get diagnosed. So why take a chance? So I encourage people for the time they're with us in the room and in our facility to wear a mask. And it looks like now that's a policy. Once again, we have to legislate what seems to be common sense to me and others. So with that, you'll be seeing that if you go to see a UConn physician in one of our many facilities. A lot of people have asked me about, if you test positive for COVID, how long should you isolate? So a lot depends on the day of, which was day zero. So day zero, if you have no symptoms, day zero is the day you tested. If you are having some symptoms, day zero is the day your symptoms started. So what happens is then, you have to really isolate for at least 5 days after you've had a close contact, okay? So test. So if you have contact with somebody, say a loved one in your household has COVID, you should test yourself at least 5 days after the contact. And within those 5 days, wear a mask when you're around other people outside your home. The other question was, is when you should isolate. So you should isolate for 5 days if you have no symptoms. And if your symptoms are improving without the use of medications, again, you could come out of isolation. But you also want to be able to test negative. So if you continue to test positive, you really should be extremely cautious because somewhere there's still virus in your nasal passages. With that, we're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to be back for an interview with Dr. Joy Antonelle DeMarchida. Dr. DeMarchida is a neurologist. We're going to be talking about Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. If you have questions, you can reach out to me at info@alessimd.com. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I don't know where Kevin found that, but that was interesting bump music, if we can call it that. But anyhow, it gives me great pleasure to have as my guest today Dr. Joy Antonelle DeMarchida. Dr. DeMarchida is a neurologist, as I mentioned, specializing in movement disorders, and she is the medical director of the David and Rhoda Chase Movement Disorders Center at Hartford Hospital, and they are now six centers throughout the state. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me this morning, Tony.
Well, I guess I'm feeling kind of old when I look at all the successes you've had, having known you since you first came to Hartford Hospital as a resident. many years ago.
For a few years ago.
It's a few years ago, and my gosh, I've been following your career from being in a solo, small private practice to now what is six centers throughout the state working under the umbrella of Hartford Healthcare. And so many of the good works that you do and your staff at the Chase Center. Tony, let's get right into it. What are movement disorders? What do people need to know about movement disorders?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, Tony, the most common movement disorder that we see at the Chase Family Movement Disorder Center is Parkinson's disease. But that actually is not the most common movement disorder globally. The most common movement disorder is actually essential tremor. So the field of movement disorders in neurology pretty much is that which cares for people who have involuntary movements or paucity of movement. So either people have too much movement or they have too little movement. And of course, this is due to a pathology in the brain or the nervous system.
So you mentioned right away tremor, essential tremor. Can you tell people what that is? Because there are a lot of people out there with a tremor, but certainly there are different types of tremor. So can you just touch on that a little bit, since I think many of the people listening here are saying, well, what is this thing I have?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about that. Yes, a lot of people think that any time that they have the shakes, that it must be Parkinson's disease. And what I've always said is that not all that shakes is Parkinson's. As I mentioned, the most common cause of the shakes is actually essential tremor. It is a condition that usually runs in the family. It's what you see when people would say that their hands would be shaking when they're doing things. So carrying a glass of water, eating their dinner, and as I said, it usually runs in the family. It can affect anyone at any age. It's not just a condition that happens as we get older. And a little trick that people are always surprised to hear about, Tony, is that it seems to subside when they have a little drink of alcohol. So that is essential tremor. It afflicts 10 million Americans, as opposed to Parkinson's disease, which afflicts about 1 million Americans. So it is 10 times more common than Parkinson's disease. And of course, there are many other causes of the shakes. Some people have it because they're taking a medication that has tremor as a side effect, or they may have another condition, which is much more unusual, called dystonia. So there are many different things that can cause shaking, and that's the reason why it's very important to have the expertise of a physician who will figure that out for you if you do have tremor.
You know, Tony, even as a neurologist, I have a basic rule. When I can't figure it out, it has to be a movement disorder because it's such a complex field. And especially when you mentioned something like dystonia, people always think of dystonia as writer's cramp or something of that nature. And we've always associated with it being psychogenic. So maybe it's worth just touching on that for a couple of minutes.
Oh, my goodness. You are being very good to us, Tony. I love the opportunity to talk about all of these conditions because there are so many people out there who may never have a diagnosis, except perhaps if they finally come to a physician who recognizes it, as I'm sure you would have, Tony. So dystonia, as I mentioned, there's about 250,000 Americans, so we're getting to less and less common conditions, right, who have this diagnosis of dystonia, wherein they have abnormal posturing of a certain part of the body. It can be the neck, it can be the hand, it can be the leg, that is caused by involuntary muscle contractions in that part of the body due to abnormal signaling from the brain. So because the part of the body is spasming and twisting, some people with dystonia can manifest with a very peculiar kind of tremor, different from essential tremor, different from Parkinson's disease, where It's more jerky. It's more irregular. It's more unusual looking. And that's why Dr. Alessi had referred to it as frequently being misdiagnosed as psychogenic, meaning that it doesn't have an organic basis. It's due to psychosocial stressors, and that is sometimes a diagnosis that is made in lieu of what is actually a pathology called dystonia.
By the way, for our listeners, psychogenic stressors never made anything better. So when people come in and say, well, it gets worse when I'm under stress, I have news for you. Everything gets worse under stress, especially a movement disorder, as you've described.
Absolutely.
One thing I want to touch on is Botox. Just has Botox kind of changed the treatment of movement disorders?
It was a breakthrough like no other. And, of course, you're referring to it as Botox because that's how most people know it. It's botulinum toxin. And at this point, there are four formulations of botulinum toxin, three of which are the A formulation and one is a B formulation. So before, for your audience, before Botox became famous worldwide for its cosmetic use, we have actually been using it in neurology for decades. What botulinum toxin does is it relaxes muscles that are overactive. So perfect segue from when I was talking about dystonia. Botulinum toxin injections are the standard treatment, the best treatment for this condition, dystonia. Remember I said that dystonia is involuntary muscle contraction that causes posturing and occasionally tremor. So what botulinum toxin will do is we inject it into those muscles that are overactive. It relaxes those muscles so they're no longer contracting constantly, and the spasms quiet down, the posturing corrects, and the tremor will also subside. So when they use botulinum toxin for cosmetic use, what they're actually doing is preventing your facial muscles from making those facial expressions so that you're not creating those hyperkinetic lines, which is the nice term for wrinkles for us women, right? So it prevents the muscles from constantly contracting and causing those ridges of hyperkinetic movement or hyperkinetic lines, which are wrinkles.
Tony, I think that's such a great explanation. What we're going to do is take a short break, and then we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. Tony DeMarchita. And we're going to be talking a lot more in the next half hour about Parkinson's disease. So if you have questions for me, just send them over by email at info@alessimd.com, and I'm happy to share those with Dr. DeMarchita. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080.
He did the Monster Mash. The Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash.
We're back on Healthy Rounds.
It caught on in
I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. It's great to be with you on this rainy Saturday. And I got an email just asking me to give Dr. DeMarchita's phone number for the Chase Movement Disorder Center. That phone number is 860-870-6385. Tony, let's start by talking about the Chase Movement Disorder Center. How did this all come about? How did this get developed and especially spread to the point where you now have six centers?
We are very, very proud of our journey, Tony, and that journey was only made possible by the vision of Hartford Healthcare, to be perfectly honest. There are movement disorders programs throughout the country that have been around for much, much longer with big university affiliations that have not been able to do what we have been able to do at Hartford Healthcare's Chase Family Movement Disorder Center. So we only started in November of 2015. And it started, Tony, with myself, one nurse practitioner, and a staff of four. In these 8 years, we have grown to 8 movement disorder specialists, 1 neuropsychiatrist, 3 social workers, 5 neuropsychologists, a staff of 60, 6 locations across the state, including one of the only all-Spanish movement disorder centers in the country. Really? And our reach has been tremendous because our program really emphasizes the comprehensive care model. And we're not just talking the talk. Everybody talks about comprehensive care, patient-centeredness. But truly, what we have created is a program that is not just patient-centered, but patient-driven. The reason why we have grown to the extent that we have is because we have been listening to our patients, listening to know what are the unmet needs in the field of movement disorders for their families, even, and in terms of their everyday lives. And we have tried to address that. And the program has developed such a tremendous set of offerings for people with Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders that we were awarded the Parkinson's Foundation Global Care Network Comprehensive Care Center designation this year. And we are the only one in the entire East Coast, Tony, to be given that designation in recognition of the program that we have developed to this degree. I can go on and on and tell you so much.
Oh, this is amazing, but how did this all come about? Somebody just decided, I mean, they wanted to start a movement disorder center and found you. Who is the Chase family? I don't know, but this sounds phenomenal.
That is quite a story. And yes, it's exactly that. Hartford Healthcare recognized that the American population is aging, right? We all know that people are living longer, living good lives into well into their 80s and 90s. And the statistics show that as Americans are living longer, then there are more and more neurodegenerative disorders, such as Parkinson's disease. So the need is great. In fact, there are only 660 movement disorders neurologists in the entire United States. So Hartford Healthcare came knocking at my door. As you said, I was at that point in a little private practice, and they said, we understand that you are one of the well-respected movement disorders specialists in the state. Will you come and start this program for us at Hartford Healthcare? And what is most endearing is that shortly after, within months of starting this program, we had the opportunity to speak with the Chase family and the Iyer family about our vision of what we wanted to create in Hartford Healthcare for movement disorders. And they felt that the program that we were thinking of developing was of such merit that they decided to put their names to it, to support with a philanthropic gift the endeavors of the Movement Disorders Program and the Neuroscience Institute. I actually was just at the Mandel JCC for the opening weekend of the Phyllis Hoffman Hartford Jewish Film Festival. And before this, I actually did not know much about David Chase, in whose name the program is dedicated. David Chase is an incredible, incredible man. He has almost an unbelievable story of survival through the Holocaust and the story of kindness and generosity and the love of the family for each other, which allowed them to survive, was just so moving and so touching. So it was called A Pocket Full of Miracles, A Tale of Two Siblings. And it followed the story of David Chase and his sister, Helen, who were the only two who survived the Holocaust in that family. So after watching that movie, Tony, I am even more proud and more honored to know that this program is carrying the Chase family name in honor of David Chase.
It's a great story, actually, and if anybody listening wants to Google that, it's a phenomenal story. Let's get into Parkinson's disease. What is Parkinson's disease?
So, as I said, Parkinson's disease is the most common movement disorder that we see in movement disorders clinics. Even if essential tremor is more common, Parkinson's disease tends to affect people in a more significant way, that they are more likely than people who have essential tremor to come to the doctor. So, as I started to mention earlier, it's a neurodegenerative disorder. What that means is what causes it is that there is loss of brain cells in a particular part of the brain called the substantia nigra. And that part of the brain is actually the primary producer of a neurochemical called dopamine. Dopamine is the neurochemical that is very important for movement. Therefore, people who have Parkinson's disease with loss of brain cells in the substantia nigra and the deficiency of dopamine will present with abnormal movement in such a way that there is loss of voluntary movement, slowness of movement, rigidity of the muscles, problems with gait and balance, and yes, a tremor. But the tremor is primarily a resting tremor as opposed to an action tremor. So this is Parkinson's disease in a nutshell, but so many other things related to Parkinson that certainly people who have this condition or have a loved one with this condition need to discuss with their neurologist.
Tony, there's certainly a range of people with Parkinson's disease. We see it in young people. We see it in older people. And, you know, more recently, Michael J. Fox has become kind of the example of Parkinson's disease. One of the most difficult things is when I see someone with Parkinson's disease or first diagnose it in somebody who's had some early onset, as soon as you mention the word Parkinson's disease, they immediately go to Michael J. Fox, thinking that they will have these dyskinetic movements and things like that. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about the range of symptoms and the ages you see of patients with Parkinson's disease?
Yes, so Parkinson's disease is still primarily a condition that affects people 65 and older. One in every 100 people 65 and older may develop Parkinson's disease. It's only about 4% of people with Parkinson's who would have it as a young onset manifestation, meaning younger than 50 years old. Michael J. Fox is a fantastic advocate for research in Parkinson's disease, and he had it when he was 29, which is very unusual. But yes, he has been a fantastic advocate for research and for services for people with PD. What Dr. Alessi is alluding to when he said, tell us about the spectrum and the range of manifestations, is because we always say in the field, you meet one person with Parkinson's disease, you've met one person with Parkinson's. It is a designer disease, it's a snowflake disease, everyone is different. The symptoms can be different, so something that you may see a neighbor with Parkinson manifest may not be anything that you will ever experience. The involuntary movements that Dr. Alessi was referring to when he said Michael J. Fox's dyskinesias is something that doesn't happen to everybody. Dyskinesias, by the way, is not a symptom of Parkinson's disease so much as a side effect of one of the medications called levodopa. So everybody is going to be different in the symptoms that they will have and the treatment that will be best for them and any potential side effects that may occur related to those treatments. So truly, when we meet somebody with Parkinson's disease and care for people with Parkinson's disease, it's a one-on-one relationship. You and your doctor will need to have conversations that will determine the best thing to do for your specific situation with Parkinson's.
That's a perfect lead into a question I just got from a patient who just said, my physician just diagnosed me with Parkinson's disease, and the decision was made not to go ahead with treatment at this stage. That's a perfect lead, and can you talk a little bit about the treatments and when you start the treatments and really the fantastic history behind treating Parkinson's disease?
Yes. To your caller who shared that information. Thank you very much. And yes, sometimes the symptoms that are presenting are so mild that your physician may feel that things like exercise, I hope your caller is listening, and a healthy lifestyle can help you with very mild symptoms such that you may not need to start treatment. However, please hear too that at any point the symptoms that you are presenting are starting to impact you in any way, please do not be afraid to start medication for Parkinson's. Remember, I said that Parkinson's is a dopamine deficiency. So like any other deficiency, if you have a vitamin B12 deficiency, you want to take vitamin B12 supplements, right? So if you have a dopamine deficiency, you have to provide dopamine to your body, to your brain. So that's what medications are. We have 33 medications for Parkinson's disease at this point, Tony. And the field is so strong in research that practically every couple of years, we have another medication coming out. We have effective treatment for the symptoms of Parkinson's. We have surgical options to treat Parkinson's. We even have a patch, an inhaler, continuous infusion of medication into the jejunum. So there are so many treatment options that are now available so that people with Parkinson's do not have to feel that they need to live with their with any challenges that they have related to having this condition. We can certainly effectively treat Parkinson's disease in this day and age.
I'm glad you mentioned the non-pharmacologic treatments of Parkinson's disease, primarily exercise, but obviously the data indicate somewhat astonishingly that patients with Parkinson's disease do better with certain activities like Latin dancing, boxing, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about some of the non-pharmacologic treatments out there for people with Parkinson's disease?
Oh, it's only been, I think, in the last 10, 12 years that the research literature exploded with a lot of evidence of the benefits of exercise, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, these non-pharmacologic measures for Parkinson's disease and other neurodegenerative disorders, Tony, such as Alzheimer's disease. So it truly is such a reversal from when we were younger and we were saying that physical therapy, maybe it might help a little bit, but it's not a major game changer. And now it's totally different. We are absolutely telling people you have to go to the physical therapist, you have to learn an exercise routine that you're going to do again and again. And yes, you're referring to Argentine tango and the study that showed that that was particularly helpful for Parkinson's. I love that. I love that dancing is a form of exercise that helps Parkinson's. But apparently any form of exercise, so long as you exercise, is going to be good for your brain cells. It can prevent dementia, slow down progression of Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease and other neurodegenerative disorder, any form of exercise. So the key is you have to find something that you enjoy doing and keep doing it and keep trying to do it more and more intensely. So it's not just limited to Argentine tango, although I recommend that to everybody, boxing, so long as you don't get your head knocked off too often, and Tai Chi, yoga, cycling, any of these things, walking. So all of these have benefits in terms of slowing down the progression of Parkinson's disease.
You know, I get to work a lot on the ugly side of boxing, where people are hurting themselves. So it's very rewarding to see that many boxing gyms now are catering to older people, in general, and especially people with Parkinson's disease. But let me ask you, Tony, what is it? What is it that makes it different with dancing and boxing? Is it because of the rhythmic nature of the activity? Is it creating new pathways? I've always been curious. What do you think?
Yeah, so if we were to talk about dancing in particular, there are so many aspects of dance that are beneficial for Parkinson's. First is the use of music. So the music, you're right, activates a different part of the brain that then can circumvent the parts of the brain that are malfunctioning in Parkinson's disease. So it's very interesting to see. There are some people who have more complicated Parkinson's after a few years who have what we call freezing of gait. And what that means is they're walking along, and in the middle of their stride, they suddenly get stuck. And the brain is trying to send signals to the feet to take another step, but the feet are not getting that signal effectively. So there's that disconnect of the brain signals and the body responding to the brain signals. So then they freeze in the middle of walking. You play marching music, and all of a sudden that person is able to walk. Or you bounce a ball in front of them, and all of a sudden they're able to run. So there are ways of activating other pathways in the brain that can circumvent and the short-circuited part of the brain that is affected in Parkinson's. So music will do that. In addition to that, tango, ballroom dancing in particular, think of the ballroom dancers and their posture. With Parkinson's disease, there's a little bit of stooping of the posture. So forcing yourself to stretch out your muscles, lift up your neck, tilt your chin, hold your head up high, and dance with those long strides that will help with the balance in time with music, which is now activating your brain in a certain way, with a dance partner who is then pushing you to walk a little longer, stride a little longer, dip so that your balance is challenged. It is actually mind-blowing to think of all the things that ballroom dancing can do that counteracts the challenges in Parkinson's disease. And of course, there's the social aspect of dance, right? In order for us to do well with a neurodegenerative disorder, as I mentioned earlier, there are a few pillars that we need to talk about. Exercise, healthy eating, the best of which is a Mediterranean diet, socialization, so that you have that connection with other people, sleep, and stress reduction. So all of these things are important, and all of these things you get from dancing, except for sleep. You do not want to sleep while you're dancing. But yeah, so it's really fascinating. Boxing, on the other hand, is something different. So now we're talking about fast movements when people are doing the, I don't know what they call it, that little boxing thing on the ceiling. So those are fast movements, and then you have strong movements where you have to give full power when you punch, and then the foot movements, so the quickness of the footwork that you have to have with boxing, and of course, balance, right? You can't throw a punch without having your feet fully grounded and having your balance and your stance strong. So there are so many aspects of these different exercise routines that we have found to be beneficial for Parkinson's. I talk too much, Tony. You have to
stop. Not at all. This is so fascinating. I've got a minute left. What's the one message we want to get across to our listeners regarding Parkinson's disease, Tony?
Oh, yes. You had mentioned earlier that sometimes when people are first diagnosed, they come to the physician and they're frightened. You know, they want to say, I hope that my doctor is not going to say that I have Parkinson's. Parkinson's disease today is not the Parkinson's disease of our grandparents. We have so many treatment options that effectively treat the symptoms that can be challenging. We have so much optimism in the field that the research is going to come up with something that can actually slow down or prevent Parkinson's disease. We have surgical options that can turn back the clock. And we have so much knowledge about so many other things that we can do to make sure that we have power over Parkinson's disease, that we have the ability to change the trajectory of how Parkinson's disease is going to affect us, and that we in the Chase Family Movement Disorder Center, with a comprehensive program that we have in Hartford Healthcare, can support you and your family with education, with resources, with free exercise classes. We have dance classes, boxing classes, tai chi, yoga, in all of our comprehensive centers, free of charge for our patients with Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. So it is no longer a disease to be frightened about. You have to come to a physician who can care for you holistically and make sure that you do as best as you can with this diagnosis, despite this diagnosis, so you can continue to live your life fully and do everything you need to do and love to do for as long as possible.
Tony, thank you for your time, and especially thank you for everything you do for our patients. And to reach out to the Chase Center, 860-870-6385. Thanks again, Tony. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be wrapping things up. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. Okay, we're going to wrap things up, as always. My thanks to Kevin Corza, who's been on the board today. Until next week, this is Dr. Anthony Alessi. Please stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Rochford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and UConn Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.